It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am foggy today. It's getting a little bit better. It's not as bad as it began this morning, looking out our window across to the Palmer Depot. And the reports from down the highway are fewer, that there's a lot of fog, but there was still fog this morning. Yeah. Strange times.
Well, we're going to have sunshine for a couple of days, so I'm happy to pay the price.
Sure. If that's the way it works, I'm not sure. In the meantime, my understanding is that there's still fogginess around a number of features of government, et cetera. And in particular, I note that, unless you've heard something different, the Alaska State Legislature is very efficiently moving along. If you look to the Senate, where there's not a lot of competition for gavel to gavel, I found myself watching a number of committee meetings and noting that there were no competitors on the House side, because the House has been very politely just meeting briefly to introduce guests who have come to visit, and then they go away and they have very short meetings, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's kind of something to behold. I too, Mike, started watching. Particularly of interest to me has been the Senate Finance Committee. I've watched for many years, of course, and I got to say, I sort of missed having Bert Stedman from Ketchikan, Senator Stedman, in that head finance chair. He's kind of briskly at sometimes, or prickly, as I've described him, but I feel a sense of confidence when he has the gavel. He's kind of a no-nonsense guy, except when he gets the giggles, which are just really fun to watch. He has really showed, and I don't know if that's one of the ones you've been watching, Mike.
I have, yes.
He really has shown the importance in government, you and I talked about this, Mike, of having that combination of historical presence, sort of the statesman, a stateswoman, and also those fresh eyes for new ideas. And I think what Senator Stedman has been exhibiting. Yesterday I watched with interest the retirement program.
TRS and PRS both, right.
Yeah, very, very important, big part of the budget. And he was really good about, giving some historical facts of the genesis of that program and what it's undergone. And there are more members on the Senate finance than we've ever had. I think almost half the Senate is on finance now. And I saw those appointments with a little trepidation because, big committees can sometimes be problematic. But I've been intrigued by the combination that are now sitting at the table and the questions, the variation of the questions that are being asked, and the leadership by Stedman. So just kind of shout out, things change during the session. And I'm certainly not going to agree, nor I don't think anybody always agrees with one particular legislator. But I think we're off to a pretty good start on the Senate. And thankfully, there is sort of a strong start there, because the other side is still sort of flopping around, hopefully finding their way soon.
Well, right. And before we leave the Senate, and particularly the Senate Finance Committee, when you reference what they do, they take up different topics. And yesterday, the TRS, PRS, debt, if you will, I can put it that way, whether those
teachers'
two...
Teachers' retirement, public workers' retirement.
Right. And just a reminder that the public workers in numbers, a much larger number than... the teachers' retirement system. These are two separate systems that are often put together, but they are really two different funds, and it requires. I know I have gone over this and reminded myself of what happened that 20 years ago, an audit a actuarial firm made a terrible error in recommending that there be a reduction in the amount being paid into the system. which resulted in a shortfall. And Stedman has the history, having been through that, having looked through and to see how that happened, and many newer observers or even members of the Senate don't have that full history. But I was also very much impressed by the presentation that was made by people who went through and very clearly pointed out where we are in this process, and that kudos to the legislature for having put some money. There was a significant payment of multiple billions of dollars made to bring this to a situation where those two systems are in relatively good shape. It's catch-up time, not completely funded, and would require, and this is what's going to be interesting as we go forward. What I saw was $300 or $400 million a year being paid into it, not billions, but if that happens, they're on schedule for essentially retiring that shortfall, and that would be a good thing, I think. But
I think what's also going to be interesting to see, we'll see, because I think that Fish Bishop from Fairbanks has been pretty clear on his position on this, is whether they return to some type of a defined benefit hybrid system. I was thinking yesterday as I was watching them that, as most people know now, we don't have a defined benefit system. We have sort of a 401k type system that people pay into. And I was reminded of how much alike that retirement system is, because it's sort of two sections of people. It's one that's sort of the older, more seasoned workers and retirees who are in that defined benefit program, and then below. And the top program, or the defined program, was set up sort of like Social Security is, where you're always getting new people to buy into the program. And the younger people are kind of paying forward their debt as they contribute. Now we don't have that layer. So we have higher costs because people have worked and earned much higher retirements because they've stuck with their jobs. And we don't have those new interjection of money. So it's a tricky situation. And I'm really fascinated. To me, that's one of the most important parts, not often talked about, but maybe more so now, because that's the one thing about only one chamber operating. There's more focus on it. So maybe it will get more discussion. But I think it's a very important topic. It's important to our workers. It's important to our state economy. And it's going to be fascinating to see how they work it out.
Well, also the other presenter at the Finance Committee meetings and some other locations has been the new budget director, who has not been able to, my observation, answer some questions that would be based upon knowledge of one, history, but two, the impact of a particular change. If a recommendation is made to move money from one place to another, following that trail, as many senators and representatives will eventually, to say, well, these are the implications of what you're saying if you're going to take money from here to there, et cetera. And I think that lack of experience or depth of knowledge showed a little bit in her presentations, particularly under questioning by a variety of senators, whichever party they were in.
Yeah, again, another tricky situation. I think that I've always said many, many times on this program, Mike, that a budget is a moral document. And all of those pieces, all those numbers go back to people and situations that aren't always clear cut as the numbers are. And even the best intentions can have some pretty serious repercussions.
Right.
And when someone comes from who's familiar with Alaska, not familiar with the people, I think it just makes it that much more difficult to make those decisions. Now, some would say that, well, she's just making them, not attached to any one thing, but It has to be, because it's the moral document of the way we operate and how we treat our older people, how we treat the youngest and the most vulnerable. And so it does matter that we know the whole makeup and the history and as we go forth, where we've been, where we are, and where we're going to go. So, something really interesting to watch. It's a complete different approach than has been done for some time. And we'll just see how that works. It's more aligned, I think, with what we're seeing on the federal level. And that's, starting to show how that approach is playing out.
And I've also been interested to watch some people who are very knowledgeable. Gutierrez wrote a lengthy article. She's an attorney and was formerly with the Department of Corrections, and provided history, because another initiative that the governor has staked out has been to focus more on deterrence in terms of the criminal justice system. And I thought what I read, this was an ADN article, outlined how it had taken some years to realized that deterrence was not working in a heavy-handed way. You were just recycling people back and enlarging prison systems. And that's why there was a 10-year effort to find ways to make sure that the person who left a prison didn't come back. That's basically it. Recidivism was as much a contributor as newly formed people being placed into prison. And I think that's going to be the pushback here. It seems almost a cycle going back and forth. Are we hard on crime, build prisons, realize that if you do that and you haven't provided any funding for what happens within that prison, so that prisoner isn't just going to be imprisoned, but has an opportunity to change their lives, that's an interesting aspect. So the other piece that happened in a...
Can I just interject one thing here, Mike?
Sure.
Yeah, Carmen Gutierrez is very well qualified and also very well said in that article. I read it this morning, Mike, and I encourage others to go to the ADN and read it. And because it's not just... it's actually a knowledgeable, have been there as part of the department participant, and I think she gives some really wise advice, and it also should remind us that big political swings are costly, and sometimes, and to people and to those that are paying the price, or the taxpayer, I guess. I think, it's been no secret, I think, that Governor Dunleavy and many of the people that support him are very keen on privatizing most public services. And I think people need to sometimes pause and think about that, because if they look and see what the public services are, for instance, the state supports over 200 airports, I think almost 300 airports in the state. Rarely states do that. We ask for a lot from our state. While privatization sounds really good, there are really good examples out there and data on how that's not turned out well in other states. And I think what Ms. Gutierrez is asking is that they look at the work of the last 10 years. They're always can make improvements and efficiencies. Another thing that the governor has recommended, but that, we need some evidence-based changes is what she's asking for. And to make this a thoughtful process and not do it because it's either a good part of the political swing or that in the end somebody else might profit and that Alaskans might pay the price.
Right. And then there's the other announcement yesterday at a press conference. The governor outlined three constitutional changes that he would like to make that basically, as I understood, was summed up as saying, we're going to have this upfront enshrining in the Constitution limits on what the legislature can do in terms of either spending money or raising money through new taxes by basically requiring that there be a vote of the people basically the responsibility is now pretty much enjoyed by the legislature to raise and spend money. Constitutional changes have been not easy to do. It'll take quite a process in order, first of all, to get through the legislature, be out to the people to vote on, and then be implemented. So it'd be a few years before all of that would be put into place. But he's very clearly staking out a different approach to the handling of money in the state of Alaska. Any comments about that?
Yeah, it does. I think it takes, I have to check, but I'm pretty sure it takes 60% of both bodies to pass that, which could be a bit difficult on the House side for sure. And, you know, elections are funny things, Mike. Ballot measures often are, some are well-intended, some are not so well-intended. Some have to do with actually making changes to our Constitution that update it to make life better for Alaskans, and some of it are a strategy to get people to the ballot box during a presidential election. There's all kinds of strategies around ballots, and there are some just that are part of fulfilling someone's campaign promise to say they tried to do it, even if it doesn't get on the ballot. And a lot of it has to do with financing of the way we finance our elections and, putting red herrings out there so that there's a lot of money that has to beat them back and that money doesn't go to something else. So it's really a complex thing. And it's going to be interesting to see what the response of the people are. I've been watching another topic, Mike, the polling that the Senate did, it came out heavily weighing that education needed to be supported and maybe more supported. And I don't know that it got the answers that some of the members of the Senate were looking for. So we'll see. We'll see how there's not going to be any shortage of opinions on this. But we should be reminded that there are a lot of bills that come out of the governor's office every year, no matter who's governor, and it must go through the legislature. And this one has a heavier lift because it requires 60% of both bodies.
Right, right.
Not just one vote. And so that can make a really big difference.
You mentioned the educational aspect of things, and of course, in addition to the Finance Committee, the Education Committee on the Senate side met, and I was particularly drawn because to that session because they were focused on the middle college, and former superintendent, I believe, Dina Paramo, formerly Paramo, spoke there as well as others. But I was also struck by some of the members not knowing what the middle college was, which has been in existence, of course, here in Mat-Su for many years and now Anchorage as well. And I thought about that and I said, this is very, very interesting. This is one program. It has been arguably successful, but it seemed to show to me that there were... like most of these topics, it requires a considerable history and understanding. Walking in and trying to grab a hold of, well, what is a particular program, what is its impact, et cetera, is a little bit difficult. And especially in light of a suggestion coming from the governor's office that the $20 million, which has been voted upon in the last legislature, is going to be spread out among school districts, has in fact ended up having school districts hire people with the understanding that money would be coming through. They're using some of their reserve funds to cover until then. The suggestion was made, well, we're not going to give you that $20 million. And that produced quite a bit of pushback. especially, I think, once again, to the budget person saying, well, the money hasn't been given, so we can take it back. Although technically that is certainly something that can be done, I thought it represented a very cold and difficult to understand statement when a legislature says they're going to do something and you say, okay, we believe that, and then there's a turnaround and that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that, you know, it's something that the school districts always worry about happening, of course, and that is why they asked to have a reserve budget, and that's why the state allows them to have up to a certain percentage of reserve to operate. And I think part of this, too, is that part of the reasoning is being that they're spending so much money or going to have to spend money in cleaning up after the earthquake. But a lot of that money is going to come from the federal government. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out. I think I heard someone in finance, I think yesterday or day before, and maybe this was Senator Stedman himself, saying that they wanted an accountability, a detailed accountability of how the earthquake money was being spent. And I think that is part of the piece here, is that, and that has been sort of a common thread. We're giving you money here, so we can't give you money here. We can't raise the base student allocation because we're buying you a new roof. And it's always a struggle over, you know, the capital gift, so to speak, as opposed to the instructional side of things, which really is really the meat and potatoes of it. So, you know, it's really early. There's going to be a lot of hostage taken and bartering before it's all over. But it is an interesting thing to throw out there from the very beginning, to cut something that even the old polling of the Senate shows that people of Alaska are supportive, and that's public education.
Right, right. And of course, then we have the, we have a lot of things in play at the present time. I think circling back, probably the most important of all of this is to have this very relaxed House, with my observation, people being very kind to one another, and there isn't a lot of yelling and jumping up and down, at least on the public face. But yet they seem to be at a stalemate that, for whatever reasons, they just cannot go beyond. And this is a fascinating example. If you've spent this many days, and you've been elected to be legislators who will discuss and come to consensus on things, it doesn't show well to people who are saying, oh, wait a second, you can't even organize? How can you possibly do bills in this case?
Yeah, what's troubling about it is that a lot of the bills that we're seeing, you know, have to be seen in both bodies, have to be heard. And with the, you know, 90-day session looming, although they can push it beyond the 90 days, and I think that is one of the bones of contention here, is that there's some move to make the majority all agree not to take anything but the budget past 90 days, so no bills past 90 days, which, you know, on the face of things sounds reasonable, because bills sometimes definitely interplay into the workings of the budget. But it is going to be very problematic now as we reach into February, and they've gone through what is just, you know, two solid weeks that is, and not be organized. And it doesn't surprise me that people are being civil and nice to each other, because the margin is very slim on who is going to be in charge. And so, you know, it's kind of like having to get along with that neighbor that has that one tool that you may or may not need all winter long, but you better be nice to them because you don't want to not have access to it. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it works out. But right now,
there's this draw to say something on the order of, okay, starting tomorrow, all money paid to legislators and their office people will stop. It just stop. When you get it together, you can start being paid. But technically, you may be in session, you're there, but somehow put skin in the game. You don't just get to do this. I think more and more people look toward that as a solution to these apparent stalemates. Well, I think we've covered a fair amount of ground here today. Any last comments?
I just want to remind people there are a plethora of meetings next week. So we'll have lots to talk about, Mike. There's February 5th, there's both a board, there's a joint city council, Palmer City Council, and Board of Economic Development meeting, which should be interesting with just a few things on the agenda, but interesting. The Matsu Borough has, on the same night, their regularly scheduled 6 p.m. meeting with an agenda already posted. And one interesting thing is that Mayor Assemblyman McKee is going to bring back reconsideration of the transportation timber permit that was passed at the last meeting. And the school district has two meetings on Wednesday, Mike. They're going to, at 5 o'clock, they'll be interviewing the new, whoever out of four applicants at this point that may want to take over the seat from the Big Lake area on the school board that's being vacated by Yvonne Ruth stepping down. So that will be interesting. And then their 6 p.m. meeting has a lot of things on it, too. So, and including a director of finance, new hire, and lots of other interesting things. So, budget revision. So I think it's going to be the full meal deal, Mike. You and I will be very busy next week. So enjoy the brief
respite.
Interlude
this week. Right, rest up. Okay, thank you.
All those things are on the web, too. So have people be safe out there and check out what's going on next week.
Okay, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.